Welcome back to Athens Happens. I'm Izzy Keller, managing editor of The New Political.
And I'm Aidan McDougal, digital content producer for The New Political.
Athens Happens is a podcast brought to you by The New Political, a student publication dedicated to explaining the nuances of Ohio University, Athens, and state politics.
You can find new episodes at thenewpolitical.com or wherever else podcasts can be downloaded.
ChatGPT is a free, language-based AI that came out last November. The bot allows anyone to ask questions or make requests and receive an almost human-like answer. The new cultural phenomenon is changing the way people work, do school, and communicate with one another. You can ask it anything, from knowledge-based questions to what is Ohio University's The New Political.
Although ChatGPT is easy to use, it raises many concerns as to how powerful AI has become. Though this advanced chatbot is still within its research phase, it still has power to produce an article or an essay on any topic. Another concern has been raised along with this form of AI and the production and spread of misinformation.
Today we are with Taylor Schneider, an OhioU student, to talk about ChatGPT and AI. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, it's really good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a second year here at Ohio University. I'm a communication studies student with a minor in political science. I'm also working towards a certificate in law, justice, and culture. Some orgs I'm involved in on campus are Students Defending Students, ACLU, and I serve as the vice president of our mock trial team.
Very nice, very cool.
And what is your first experience with AI?
So AI in general, I mean, is used everywhere. It's used in our phones, it's used on our computers, but AI in terms of ChatGPT, which is kind of what we're focusing on today, I was introduced to in a class, a CLJC seminar here at Ohio University previously this semester. And my teacher started talking to us about it and just was putting it on our radar that it was something that students and faculty were talking about. And honestly, I had no idea that it even existed. And immediately after the class, I pulled it up on my computer, made an account, and started messing around with it. Soon after that, we brought in somebody to talk to ACLU that gave a presentation, and that kind of just furthered my interest about it.
I understand where you're coming from, like with like phones and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think my biggest or first experience with it just came along with once you talked about it and then hearing a couple news articles. And I was like, that sounds interesting, but I never used it until earlier this week. And I was like, oh, what can I make it say? What can I make it do about like ChatGPT stuff? And mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, for me, it's weird, but I think that first experience just kind of made me understand what it is and what it can do and how it kind of has endless possibilities right now.
Yeah, I love watching people's first time typing something into that chatbot because it's always a crazy response because they get something and they're like, oh my gosh, this exists. And then it changes their mindset on technology forever moving forward. But yeah.
So my first experience with ChatGPT was a lot less than, it was through South Park. My first time, like, somebody using it around me, it was, like, my ex-boyfriend, which is another great example. But I first used it myself, I would say, like, an hour ago, maybe. And I looked up, what is The New Political Athens, Ohio? And it told me what Athens was. But I played with it, like, best journalism schools in Ohio. What is Ohio University's The New Political? Stuff like that. And it's kind of scary, to be completely honest. What was your first reaction when you used it?
My first reaction was like, no way this is actually a thing that's happening. But then I was scared because it was an overwhelming amount of technology that I couldn't pick apart, that I couldn't make sense of. Mm-hmm. And that's coming from a girl that like trying to understand Bluetooth scares me, or Wi-Fi kind of scares me because like, guys, how is that happening? Right. So AI was just adding another layer to that scaredness. But as time has progressed, I've become more comfortable with it. But like also just more comfortable with the unknown that there may never be a day where I fully understand how it's working, but in that moment, it was definitely scary. Yeah.
It's terrifying. So where does your interest in AI and ChatGPT come from?
My interest comes from like what I want to do in the future. So eventually I want to become an attorney. And when I'm thinking about how that's going to work with new technology that comes out, I do get scared because with AI existing, I don't put it past this technology that it could formulate arguments. It could formulate funny arguments. It could formulate harsh arguments. It can formulate graceful arguments. And those are all things that my voice and the way I articulate may not be able to have that variety in the courtroom. So I'm worried that the intelligence of this thing is going to overpower what I want to do, and then my career may not exist. So figuring out what it is, how it's working, why it's working is what interests me, because I want to know how it's going to impact me and how it's going to impact, you know, the people around me in the near future, because it's obviously developing faster than we can even conceptualize.
No, that's a definite concern in journalism. Because I think, what was it, like BuzzFeed fired a certain number or a certain percentage of their staff to make way for like AI. That's scary.
Yeah.
Especially given the already employment issues in journalism that I won't go into. But
I mean, I think my interest falls in line with Taylor because we're both on mock trial and we both want to be lawyers when we grow up, you know. But I think that interest that I have now is what is it, what can it do, and how can I use it to better what I'm doing or stuff like that. And I know I saw on Twitter, well, I saw two things. I saw one of a lawyer who was like, this is how I put in all my stuff for this case, and it kind of gave me solid responses. And I know there was one student on the West Coast where she kind of chat GPT'd her whole LSAT and got like 100% on it. Yes. And it was like crazy. But after she got a whole bunch of congratulations, she felt guilty and like confessed to it. And it was just weird. I mean, I think it's weird that no one is questioning 100% on an SAT, but LSAT, not SAT, but yeah, I think that interest is just, what is it now? What can it be? And how can I use it in a good way? Because I don't really want to use it in a bad way, but yeah.
I think we'll get to that in a little bit, but no. Like, do you remember the picture of, like, the Pope? And it was, like, what was it called? It was, like, dripped out Pope, and he's in, like, a Balenciaga jacket, and people thought that that was, like, real. Mm-hmm. Like, the Pope is wearing Balenciaga.
Yeah.
That man wears, like, I don't know. I'm not Catholic, I don't know, but, like, I don't know if it's a robe or if it's like a dress or something. He's not wearing Balenciaga. But, you know, I think...
He's wearing the finest silks.
That the Vatican can find.
I mean...
Sorry, what?
The finest silks. Okay, Aiden.
You know, I think that it can kind of mess with the way that people perceive the world because they don't know what's real anymore. Do you think that's an issue with it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest issue with AI is that it takes all of the information that exists. It doesn't filter out what's true and what's false. And so sometimes it's going to give you a false answer. It's going to give you several false answers. When you're telling it to spit out an essay, you don't know how much of that is going to be true because it's not citing anything. So we already run into this in social media when we're scrolling and we don't know what to believe. And sometimes we're reposting things that just straight up aren't true. And then it perpetuates this, I don't know, I don't really want to use the word like propaganda, but it perpetuates things that are untruthful, and that can hurt people, obviously. And so AI specifically, it's acting like a human, and we as humans have systemic problems, right? There's systemic racism, there's systemic homophobia, there's all these systemic problems, and AI is not immune to that because it's pulling information from things humans have created. So when you're asking it to give you book recommendations, the majority of the authors are going to be men. You know, the majority of the authors are going to be white. And so that's a really big problem. While the books that they're giving you are real books and those are real authors, I guess it's not spitting you false information. But then on top of the fact that it could be, it's also perpetuating stereotypes that already exist. So I think those are the two main concerns with it right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
I mean, reword all of it. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you like entirely. And I think with a language-based AI, I think it has a little bit more power than just pictures, because I know before the whole indictment of former President Trump, there was like a couple pictures that went around on Twitter of like him running from the cops, and people were like, oh, are those real? And it's like, no, but I think if you have a whole statement that says it's drafted by like the DA of Manhattan, and you read it and you're like, oh, he said that? No, it was an AI that someone just typed in and just posted it. I think that can hold more power to more things. And I know for even like classes we're in that some professors are like, hey, don't use this at all. Cause I mean, I get to the extent we're not learning anything. We're learning AI. We're not learning what our course material is. But I think that expansiveness of like misinformation that can just develop and spread like crazy just because of how social media is and how people just take a thing and just run. I think that's my biggest fear with it.
Yeah. And we're all guilty of that too, right? Like how are we supposed to know what's true or not? We're basing what we know as truth based off of what people are posting and the credibility we associate with those people. But there comes a point where there's not going to be a way to differentiate, and that's what's scary. And the creators of ChatGPT and these other like AI bots that are coming out are aware of that, and it's something that they're trying to fix and implement so that going forward, it's not a problem. But we know that it's always going to be a problem. You know, like those systemic problems are going to exist. You know, they're not going to be uprooted by the creators of AI. That, like, that's virtually impossible for them. They can try and be aware of it, but completely fixing the issue, I just think, is out of their reach, because this technology is advancing so quickly.
I think that the conversation then comes around to media, whether that is social media, traditional media, legacy media, a whole bunch of people who have a lot of power in these conversations to, you know, it kind of comes around for them to beef up their rules regarding misinformation, disinformation. And it seems like there's a lot of hesitancy to do anything about that.
Given our fears of all of the misinformation that is possible, do you think this type of advancement in AI seems to be too much, or is it too little?
Oh, that's so hard, because there are pros, which I do want to talk about real fast before I answer this question. Specifically, the pros that I've seen is talking to my parents, who both work in the healthcare industry. They've talked about the advancements that AI is making in the healthcare industry. It's developing cures for things we have never seen cures for. It's able to consolidate data in a way that humans aren't able to do at that type of rate, amongst other things. Those are just examples that I'm thinking of. And that's amazing. Those are things that we as humans cannot do in our capacity right now. So there are really good things happening, but trying to understand something that's moving this rapidly is impossible for any of us. And it's moving this rapidly because, you know, ethically, we can't conduct all the studies that would give us the information about the human brain because, you know, there's like ethics limitations to that. But with AI, there's not limitations. You can conduct study after study after study, and you can keep developing it and keep developing it. And I think that's why sometimes it feels as if it can be too much. So I do think there are good things that are going to come out of it, good things that are already coming out of it. But for us as lay people, this technology is not something that I don't think any of us saw coming this quickly. And I don't think we know what to do with it. And I don't think it should be used at the rate that it's being used until we know how to use it ethically and until we know how to use it in a way that's not going to harm people. So that's why I would lean towards thinking that it's maybe a little bit too much right now, because I don't think we're taking a step back and realizing the harm that it can do.
I mean, yeah. And I think, I mean, I also agree that it's too much, but I think my preface is more along the line of it was just kind of thrown out and released. I mean, it came out in November of 2022, and we just have it at our disposal. Just you open a browser, sign up, and you just can type away whatever you want with this. And I mean, that's ChatGPT specifically, but for other certain things, I know, like, even with like your parents and like the medical field, like how that can be beneficial. But I think overall, just the jump that we see over and over can be too much just for like just a normal person to understand, because I mean, we're given this thing that can just write up whatever, and I give it one prompt and I'm like, okay, here's a great essay, let me turn it into my professor. And I'm like, I didn't do any research, I didn't learn anything,
right?
But I feel like that just kind of hurts us as people. And I know, like what you said of how it can, like, it doesn't have the capacity to like understand like human brain stuff, it just is more like a language-based AI that can just produce whatever blurb of words that kind of makes sense. You know, sometimes it's wrong, but I think just for anyone out there who doesn't fully know what it is, it can be too much.
Yeah, absolutely. But the fact that it exists, it's already out there. You know, it's not going to be taken away. So figuring out what to do with it moving forward is the next challenge, because I don't think we can just erase it at this point.
It has been banned in Italy.
Really?
Yeah.
Italy, I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
I don't know why, but they did. I mean, I don't see why they couldn't, but yeah.
Interesting.
On the topic of that, do you guys think that there should be any restrictions on this type of AI?
I'm worried that if we put restrictions on it, we're going to be doing ourselves a disservice. So I know that's hard, And that's definitely something that I've battled in my own brain. But something that definitely needs to be done is the little blurb on the website that says it may produce false information. And that warning, it needs to be big and it needs to be bold. It doesn't need to be hidden in the bottom right corner, right? It needs to be something that people are more than aware of when they're signing up, so they know what they're getting themselves into. But restrictions, are you asking restrictions for, like, from the government or like from OU or what specific, or you mean restrictions on the actual?
Just like restrictions, period. Should it be restricted to certain people in certain, like, you know, careers? Should it be only for medical professionals, as you said? Should it be only people who are working in certain aspects of the government? Should it just be for people doing research purposes? Like, there should there be restrictions on who can and can't use it?
Maybe until we can figure out how to do it in an ethical and moral way, it probably shouldn't be available to the greater public, because we know that there's technology out there that's not available to us, you know, as students, so that it's only available to people doing research, or it's only available to people in the FBI or people in the government. So we know things like that already exist. And with this form of AI specifically, it could be beneficial to maybe keep it away from the public until we can figure out how to use it in an effective and a ethical way.
Okay.
I mean, this time I don't really fall in the same line, but I mean, I agree with, like, you're making it bigger and bold to, like, this might produce false information, but I think with the fact that it's out there now, and I don't think restrictions should be really put on it. I think it should just be, we have it, because, I mean, OpenAI is still, I mean, they've stated that they're still in, like, a research phase or developing whatever, trying to make it better in a certain way, but I think it's the fact that we have it, and we should just learn what it is more and know how to use it instead of just taking it away and then kind of slowly introducing it. I think the fact that it's out, but I think it could just be better for us or for anyone. Maybe not for people in, like, certain positions of government. I think that one could be a nice little restriction, because I'd like to actually hear what you have on your mind instead of what an AI just told you to say. But yeah. I think...
No AI speechwriters.
No AI speechwriters. But I think it would be better as the general public just to learn what it is and how to actually use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm thinking more about that question, I'm thinking about where this type of AI is going. And, you know, when Google comes out, it's not going to look, Google's isn't going to look the same as our OpenAI ChatGPT that we've, you know, been using recently. This new GPT called GPT-4, you can literally upload a worksheet. It'll scan it and output responses to questions. Like, if we think what's happening now is crazy, that's adding a whole nother layer of intelligence that we aren't able to conceptualize. So maybe as it is right now, there may not need to be restrictions, because as I'm hearing Aiden talk, it's kind of changing my mind a little bit. But looking at where it's going in the future and how rapid it's changing, there may need to be restrictions on what's about to come out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think ChatGPT is a productive form of AI?
From a student perspective, yes. I think when I'm really struggling to understand a concept and my book and my professor hasn't been able to articulate it to me in a way that makes sense, I can put it into AI and ask it to reword it 15 times until I understand it. And I think that's absolutely been productive in terms of my understanding and my education. On a grander scale, I think when we're seeing the healthcare advancements that have been going on, I also think that that is productive. I think it can have its flaws and simultaneously still be a productive form of AI, yes.
But how do you think it could be used better?
Kind of touching on what we talked about earlier, I think it can be used better by the user being aware of the downfalls and the limitations that this form of AI has. So it shouldn't be used by students asking it to write a 500-word essay, right? Because what are we getting out of that as students? It needs to be used in a way that educates us and helps us, doesn't put us behind.
I think that's a very good point. My next question, we're like rapid firing now, geez. What do you think about other companies such as Google introducing the same type of AI?
Yeah, I I think it's a little bit scary for me because there's obviously a lot of smart people in the world, and when all of those brains are coming together trying to compete of who's going to have the best AI and the most intelligent AI, we have no idea what's going to come out of that. And when I was reading about Google's AI, which is like GPT-4, you can feed it a graph and it's going to make calculations based off of that graph and the data. And that's awesome. I mean, that's going to save us so much time and give us time to be able to maybe research other topics or articulate the discussion section while ChatGPT-4 is, you know, making our calculations for us. So I think there are really good things to come. But again, we have to like be very aware of the limitations that it has, or maybe the systemic problems that it's going to perpetuate by just simply existing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think just putting companies such as Google or like even Amazon, if they do it, or Bing, whoever, but I think to put all those minds of developers together wouldn't really be a crazy big problem, because I think then it falls more into how to make it more useful. And I know, well, with like ChatGPT-4 and just like giving it like that graph, but I think Google at some point is putting in like Drive or Workspace, I think more specifically Docs, a little thing where you can just get a little summary of what you just wrote. So you don't have to write one out and you just have it there. And I think that doesn't hurt in a way, because I mean, you wrote everything else that's in it and they're just like, well, these are all your words, so we're just going to put it in like a coherent, concise form. And I think other companies introducing the same thing isn't a bad idea, because it just broadens the field and more different ways to learn and to use, and so we can just figure it out all together.
I also think we have to ask ourselves, how much money are these people going to be making off of this? And is that where we want money to be distributed, specifically in America? Do we want the money that's already in the top 1% to stay in the top 1% and more money to be, you know, put into the top 1%? That's another part of it, the economy side of it, that worries me a little bit, because we have to think about who are the people that have access to this type of stuff. You know, not everybody has a computer, not everybody has a phone, not everybody knows that this even exists. And the fact that we do and we're even having this conversation right now is a privileged conversation to have. But thinking about people who may not have access to this type of technology yet makes me worried for this gap that already exists, that gap is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
And it's also worth mentioning, on an economic point, this is going to take jobs from people. And it's like in the same thing as like automation. Like, I keep in my head like picturing, and this is so just like elementary, but like the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, when the dad was like his job was like what, screwing caps on
toothpaste.
Yeah. And then the automation came. It's like that, but it's coming for, you know, maybe jobs that you two are looking forward to, or you two want to have in the future, or the job I want to have in the future. And that can be scary. And additionally, as Aiden said, with like, you know, the government thing, like you don't want AI writing somebody's speech.
Yeah.
And even, I don't even want AI writing like a summary on my Google Docs, because I like to do that because I like it to be bright. And I don't trust it. I don't know. The whole thing just makes me super anxious.
Yeah, so I was actually having a conversation with a friend about this a few days ago. And he was talking to me about how he thinks he needs to find a different career path, because in the near future, AI may be able to be, because he wanted to go into personal finance, right? Mm-hmm. Helping people distribute their finances, make sense of their finances. And it's safe to assume that that's something AI is going to be able to do for people in the near future. So he's trying to figure out, you know, what am I going to do with my career with the degree that I've been working 2 years on already? And that's something that, and that's like a business major, right? And that's something that you usually think is pretty safe, and those jobs are always going to exist. So it's not just attacking social science majors. It's not just attacking artists and journalists and attorneys. It's attacking jobs across the globe, because it's not just technology that's technology. It's technology that's imitating a human. And so it will be taking human jobs. That's something that's going to happen. But something that I've tried to tell myself to keep hope is that I'm going to be Taylor no matter what. You know, even if AI is able to write something in a way that Taylor Schneider would write it, Taylor Schneider still didn't write it. You know, right. I'm an individual person who has my individual traits And I have my pros and cons, and no technology is ever going to be able to encompass that the way I can. So when thinking about my job in the future, yes, it's going to be able to write arguments. Yes, it's going to be able to write drafts. And yes, it's going to be able to write amicus briefs and all of those things, but it's still not going to be Taylor Schneider writing those briefs. And to me, that's something that I have to keep holding on to, because the zealous advocacy that I want to give my clients is something that AI isn't going to be able to replicate. So that's how I'm, you know, keeping hope and moving forward with my degree. And I hope that other people can find creative ways to know that they are who they are, regardless of what technology gets brought out, and they are capable of doing what they want, because it's them doing it at the end of the day. So that's the advice, or the, you know, little brain plop that I would give people who are worried about this technology taking over what they're going to do in the future.
Yeah, that's a really good, I think, mindset to have. But I, you know, I just used ChatGPT for the first time today. And, you know, that's, you know, I was freaked out, and I'm sure a lot of other people are still really freaked out. Professors I've talked to are freaked out.
I mean, I agree with both of you. I think it definitely comes down to that point. If it doesn't have that individuality, and it doesn't, like, I know even when we're writing any essay or anything we write in our political science, comms, or journalism majors, it doesn't have that individuality of, like, a person writing it. Because I know everyone has their own writing style. I mean, I know when I type, I use a lot of commas. And, like, I got told all throughout high school, hey, it's maybe not a great thing to do this, but anytime I cheated on anything, they're like, you didn't write this. And I'm like, what do you mean? But it's like, because you didn't have, like, six different commas in, like, these three sentences. And I'm like, okay, fair. But I think eventually certain aspects could attack jobs in, like, that way. But, like, totally what Taylor said, it doesn't have that individuality of, like, Taylor did this, Aiden did this, Izzy did this. It doesn't have that. And I think that's what's going to be a key point for now. It might advance to a point to where it can have that. And I think that's a great thought process and a great little idea to have, to just keep everyone going and understanding that we're not going to lose everything. We're not going to graduate and then not have a job because an AI can be a better lawyer than I can. I think it's who we are, and that's what matters the most out of everything right now.
Very good. So, how do you think, as a student, universities should handle new technologies like ChatGPT?
I was thinking about this when it was first introduced to me, because, like I mentioned earlier, it was introduced to me by a professor. And then a few days later, I had a class with a different professor who said, I better not catch you using AI under any circumstances. I don't care if you're even citing it. Don't use it. And at first I was like, fair. Yeah, you don't want to be submitted an essay that wasn't written by Taylor, right? But then I thought about it a little more, and I think that Ohio University and other campuses in general would be doing students a disservice by not letting us use AI at all. Because imagine what would happen if they took away our computers and made us go to the library to research everything. It would take an ungodly amount of time, it would be tedious, and it would take us forever to do it. And by the time we enter the workforce, we aren't going to know how to use a computer, right? So if this truly is the future of our technology, our generation is going to have to roll with the punches. We're going to have to understand how it works. And it's going to be a battle of who knows how to work it better than the other person. And we want to be able to enter the workforce with an understanding of what ChatGPT is, or whatever, you know, comes out by the time we graduate. Because if we don't understand that, and other students in the workforce do, they're going to be getting the job over us. They're going to be doing the job more efficiently. So I think that on campuses, it doesn't need to be something that's blocked on the Wi-Fi, right? I think it's something that, because it exists, we need to learn how to use it ethically, how to use it morally. And shying away from the fact that it exists isn't going to change the fact that it exists, and I can type it in on my computer in 2 seconds. So it'd be interesting if teachers and professors and faculty members in general maybe start having more open conversations about this. I know that some professors are scared of this and they don't want us using it under any circumstances, but I'd really encourage professors that have that mindset to think about what that's going to do to us as students when we do graduate from here and we enter a world that is more or less going to be AI oriented.
But yeah, I think as a student and a professor, it's at a different level of, like, understanding what this technology is, because, I mean, as students, we're still learning. And when we go out and after we graduate, after some of us go to law school or med school, whatever we do, by the time we're out in like the workforce doing whatever we want to do, this will still be here. This isn't going away. And I think for us to learn it and how to use it, not entirely rely our whole like profession on it, but just to understand that this exists, this is how we use it, is a lot different for us now than it is for professors who have been teaching for the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years. But I think that disconnect is kind of what we're seeing now with your professor who was like, don't use it under any circumstances. I mean, the other day I fed it our little like blurb of like our case that we had for mock trial given to us by like the American Mock Trial Association. And it was like, it was easier to understand. It broke it down in a way that made sense. And it's not like I took that and ran with it and presented a whole case in front of judges and was like, this is what I think. It was like, no, this is just what happened here. This is what happens here. This is how you can argue this. And it's not, I think, a tool that most students are using to write a full essay and just to throw it out. Because I think even just giving it that prompt and looking at that essay, you're like, yeah, that's not fully right. But I think it's that disconnect that we're seeing now is the biggest thing of us as students and prospective students are going to stick with this and have this while professors are not going to enjoy it. But I think learning about it is our best bet for anything.
Yeah, I also think that students would be doing themselves a disservice by using this to write their essays or uploading a worksheet and getting all of the answers, right? Because why are you paying thousands of dollars to go here just to get that out of it? And when you are put in a job where you need to use these skills that you were supposed to learn when you were getting your degree and you don't have them, you're not going to survive. You're going to drown. So students that are doing that, you know, that's going to come back on them regardless. So putting it in a syllabus isn't going to change who and who's not going to use this. But I also think that this can be a good thing for professors as well. Professors working with, you know, the experience that I have, looking at my peers around me that are working on theses, they have spent hours coding data, collecting data, you know, condensing it in a way that makes sense to people around them. If all of that could have been done in 5 seconds, then their effort could have gone somewhere else to maybe make a fuller thesis or make it longer or maybe, you know, collect more data. So I think it can be used for good. And, you know, most of the professors on this campus are doing their own research as well. And this could help them. So shying away from it, I don't think is good for anybody right now.
Yeah, a whole bunch of good points. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so. I'm really happy that I got to do this, though. It was a lot of fun.
No, thank you so much for coming. You gave us a lot of really good insight.
And that's a wrap for this episode of Athens Happens. Make sure to check us out at thenewpolitical.com for more podcast episodes and other content. Thank you, and until next time.